"May I ask where you live, sir?" said I.
"Hampshire. Charming rural place. The Copper Beeches, 5 miles on the far side of Winchester. It is the most lovely country, my dear young lady, and the dearest old country house."
"And my duties, sir? I should be glad to know what they would be."
"One child. One dear little romper, just 6 years old. Oh, if you could see him killing cockroaches with a slipper! Smack, smack, smack! 3 gone before you could wink." He leaned back in his chair and laughed his eyes into his head again.
I was a little startled at the nature of the child's amusement, but the father's laughter made me think that perhaps he was joking.
"My sole duties, then," I asked, "are to take charge of a single child?" "No, no, not the soul, not the soul, my dear young lady," he cried. "Your duty would be, as I am sure your good sense would suggest, to obey any little commands my wife might give, provided always that they were such commands as a lady might with propriety obey. You see no difficulty, eh?"
"I should be happy to make myself useful."
"Quite so. In dress now, for example. We are faddy people, you know, faddy, but kind-hearted. If you were asked to wear any dress which we might give you, you would not object to our little whim, eh?"
"No," said I, considerably astonished at his words.
"Or to sit here or sit there, that would not be offensive to you?"
"Oh, no."
"Or to cut your hair quite short before you come to us?"
I could hardly believe my ears.
"As you may observe, Mr. Holmes, my hair is somewhat luxuriant and of a rather peculiar tint of chestnut. It has been considered artistic. I could not dream of sacrificing it in this off-hand fashion."
"I'm afraid that that is quite impossible," said I.
He had been watching me eagerly out of his small eyes, and I could see a shadow pass over his face as I spoke. "I am afraid that it is quite essential," said he. "It is a little fancy of my wife's, and ladies' fancies, you know, madam. Ladies' fancies must be consulted." "And so you won't cut your hair?"
"No, sir, I really could not," I answered firmly.
"Ah, very well, then that quite settles the matter. It is a pity, because in other respects you would really have done very nicely. In that case, Miss Stoper, I had best inspect a few more of your young ladies." The manageress had sat all this while busy with her papers, without a word to either of us, but she glanced at me now with so much annoyance upon her face that I could not help suspecting that she had lost a handsome commission through my refusal.
"Do you desire your name to be kept up on the books?" she asked.
"If you please, Miss Stoper." "Well, really, it seems rather useless, since you refuse the most excellent offers in this fashion," said she sharply. "You can hardly expect us to exert ourselves to find another such opening for you. Good day to you, Miss Hunter." She struck a gong upon the table, and I was shown out by the page. "Well, Mr. Holmes, when I got back to my lodgings and found little enough in the cupboard, and 2 or 3 bills upon the table, I began to ask myself whether I had not done a very foolish thing. After all, if these people had strange fads and expected obedience on the most extraordinary matters, they were at least ready to pay for their eccentricity. Very few governesses in England are getting £100 a year. Besides, what use was my hair to me? Many people are improved by wearing it short, and perhaps I should be among the number. Next day, I was inclined to think that I had made a mistake, and by the day after, I was sure of it. I had almost overcome my pride so far as to go back to the agency and inquire whether the place was still open, when I received this letter from the gentleman himself. I have it here, and I will read it to you. The Copper Beeches, near Winchester. Dear Miss Hunter, Miss Stoper has very kindly given me your address, and I write from here to ask you whether you have reconsidered your decision. My wife is very anxious that you should come, for she has been much attracted by my description to you. We are willing to give £30 a quarter, or £120 a year, so as to recompense you for any little inconvenience which our fads may cause you. They are not very exacting, after all. My wife is fond of a particular shade of electric blue, and would like you to wear such a dress indoors in the morning. You need not, however, go to the expense of purchasing one, as we have one belonging to my dear daughter Alice, now in Philadelphia, which would, I should think, fit you very well. Then, as to sitting here or there, or amusing yourself in any manner indicated, that need cause you no inconvenience. As regards your hair, it is no doubt a pity, especially as I could not help remarking its beauty during our short interview. But I am afraid that I must remain firm upon this point, and I only hope that the increased salary may recompense you for the loss. Your duties, as far as the child is concerned, are very light. Now do try to come, and I shall meet you with the dog-cart at Winchester. Let me know your train. Yours faithfully, Jeffro Rycastle. That is the letter which I have just received, Mr. Holmes, and my mind is made up that I will accept it. I thought, however, that before taking the final step, I should like to submit the whole matter to your consideration. "Well, Miss Hunter, if your mind is made up, that settles the question," said Holmes, smiling. "But you would not advise me to refuse?" "I confess that it is not the situation which I should like to see a sister of mine apply for."
"What is the meaning of it all, Mr. Holmes?"
"Ah, I have no data. I cannot tell. Perhaps you have yourself formed some opinion?"
"Well, there seems to me to be only one possible solution. Mr. Rycastle seemed to be a very kind, good-natured man. Is it not possible that his wife is a lunatic, that he desires to keep the matter quiet for fear she should be taken to an asylum, and that he humours her fancies in every way in order to prevent an outbreak?"
"That is a possible solution. In fact, as matters stand, it is the most probable one. But in any case, it does not seem to be a nice household for a young lady."
"But the money, Mr. Holmes, the money!"
"Well, yes, of course, the pay is good. Too good. That is what makes me uneasy. Why should they give you £120 a year, when they could have their pick for 40? There must be some strong reason behind."
"I thought that if I told you the circumstances, you would understand afterwards if I wanted your help. I should feel so much stronger if I felt that you were at the back of me."
"Oh, you may carry that feeling away with you. I assure you that your little problem promises to be the most interesting which has come my way for some months. There is something distinctly novel about some of the features. If you should find yourself in doubt or in danger—"
"Danger? What danger do you foresee?"
Holmes shook his head gravely. "It would cease to be a danger if we could define it," said he. "But at any time, day or night, a telegram would bring me down to your help."
"That is enough," she rose briskly from her chair, with the anxiety all swept from her face. "I shall go down to Hampshire quite easy in my mind now. I shall write to Mr. Rycastle at once, sacrifice my poor hair tonight, and start for Winchester tomorrow."
With a few grateful words to Holmes, she bade us both good night, and bustled off upon her way. "At least," said I, as we heard her quick, firm steps descending the stairs, "she seems to be a young lady who is very well able to take care of herself." "And she would need to be," said Holmes gravely. "I am much mistaken if we do not hear from her before many days are past." It was not very long before my friend's prediction was fulfilled. A fortnight went by, during which I frequently found my thoughts turning in her direction, and wondering what strange side alley of human experience this lonely woman had strayed into. The unusual salary, the curious conditions, the light duties, all pointed to something abnormal, though whether a fad or a plot, or whether the man were a philanthropist or a villain, it was quite beyond my powers to determine. As to Holmes, I observed that he sat frequently for half an hour on end, with knitted brows and abstracted air, but he swept the matter away with a wave of his hand when I mentioned it. "Data, data, data!" he cried impatiently. "I can't make bricks without clay!" And yet he would always wind up by muttering that no sister of his should ever have accepted such a situation.